Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Our show today is brought to you from the studio at American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. Editors Jennifer Keltner and Jody Sanders are here with a full show of tips. They have things about expanding your skill set, working with round robins, scraps, and a whole lot of interesting information that you're going to love. Let's take a listen.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner here with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and I'm in the studio today with editor Jody Sanders from Quilts & More magazine. And Jody and I are going to talk about challenging ourselves as quilters to grow and learn and to really expand our skill set. And I don't know about you, Jody, but I always feel like every year I'm a better editor on the products that we produce if I learn something new. Because I think one of the frustrations when you're learning something new, whether it's to quilt or to do something different, is you forget what it's like when you were a novice. And I've been quilting for a number of years, but learning a new technique or a new challenge for myself helps me grow.
It's always exciting in our office because we have an opportunity to see all those new tools and gadgets, new techniques that come in from new designers. So it's easy for us to sometimes see those challenges because and be able to grow because we are exposed to a lot of things. But if you're not exposed to that and you're trying to figure out, well, how can I grow and challenge myself as a quilter, we've got some great ideas for you today.
Well, let's start out talking about something that first appeared in the February 2014 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting, and that is our Quilt Along. And for readers who aren't familiar with what a Quilt Along is, do you want to sort of explain what the basic premise of that is?
Yeah, usually somebody, some leader or some designer will pick a particular block or a particular quilt, and they may give you just portions of that quilt, or they may actually give you the whole quilt, or you'll make multiples of one particular block, and you kind of all do it at the same time. And it's kind of a challenge to keep up with the other people, see what they're making. A lot of times they'll just give you the list of ingredients or the materials that you might need to begin with. And that's sometimes a challenge, especially if you don't know what the end result is going to be. The nice thing about the quilt in American Patchwork and Quilting is Lisa actually had the quilt done, and it was a beautiful quilt, and we knew lots of people were going to want to make that quilt, and that you could make it in so many different fabric combinations that we just thought this would be a great opportunity for people to learn some different techniques, perhaps.
Right. So the thing with the quilt along that we did was it was on based on the quilt called Tone It Down, and if you want to see that original quilt that Lisa Alexander, the designer, made, you can see it at her blog. And her blog is modalisa.blogspot.com. And Moda Lisa is M-O-D-A-L-I-S-S-A. There are two S's there. So modalisa.blogspot.com. And Lisa had challenged herself when she was designing this quilt. She doesn't usually work with a lot of small to medium scale light prints. And she wanted to use all of those prints together from her stash and use them as the background for her blogs. And then the other challenge she had set up for herself was to keep the contrast to a minimum. And that's how the quilt got its name of Tone It Down, to really keep that low level of contrast. Some of you might have heard the term low volume or seen that term floated around on the web. And really, it just talks about keeping the contrast of things. So that was Lisa's attempt. Tone It Down was her attempt at a low-volume quilt. And so from that, we challenged the readers of American Patchwork and Quilting and also several designers to join in and to make their version of it. And what was cool about this quilt along, I think, was it could be your style, whatever your style was. It didn't have to match Lisa's version of this quilt, but we really wanted to see how people would interpret it. So there were several different designers, and I know that, Jody, you got involved in this quilt along. I did as well. So share what you've done.
Yeah, you know, I came into this kicking and screaming because, like many of us, I said, I just don't need one more project to do. I don't need one more project. But after seeing so many of the variations of the blocks posted on people's blogs and on Instagram, it was so much fun to see, you know, all the variations and the different blocks that were done. And I actually came across an antique quilt. This block is kind of based on a Burgoyne surrounded quilt block. And I saw an antique quilt made with the same pieces, but the colors were a little different. The lights and the darks were switched a little bit in those positions. And I thought, you know what, I want to get involved in this thing too. It was just too much fun not to be involved. So I actually started my quilt with a border fabric. I found a border print. It was a large scale, kind of paisley and floral, and I just loved that print. And that's what I started with, and then I started pulling fabrics to make my blocks based on the colors that were in that border print, which is another way to kind of challenge yourself when you're trying to figure out what color palette do I want to use.
Right. And for those listening, you can see some of the results of Jody's efforts and also my efforts in the quilt along at allpeoplequilt.com. And then there's a button at the top of the page where it says magazines and more. And if you click on that button, you'll find our blog. And all of our examples and photos of us working through this quilt along can be found on our blog at allpeoplequilt.com.
I think one of the fun things about this, too, is it's really become kind of a modern quilting bee. You know, instead of sitting around maybe in person seeing what different blocks people are making or different color combinations, we've got people posting pictures on Instagram from Australia and from the UK, and it's fun to see the interpretations maybe from different countries and what they look like compared to the fabrics that we have here in the U.S.
Right, and there was a hashtag APQ quilt along that you could also use if you were working on this so you could post your things and we could all see them. For my version of the quilt along, I decided to challenge myself. I don't usually work with really muted fabrics or low contrast. For me, that was a new challenge. And so I did mine working with Japanese taupes and a variety of very, very low contrast grays and taupes and muted browns and sort of soldier blue, but really grayed up, I guess, colorway. And it was so interesting to me as I worked through this process because I picked my palette of fabrics to begin with, and I limited myself to using just those fabrics. I didn't want to incorporate anything else in once I had chosen them. And for the first couple of blocks I made, the contrast was really low. And then I stepped away from it for a while and came back and made a third block. And I think I lost my way. I sort of forgot what it was that I was doing because I put the third block up on the wall and I thought, well, that's interesting. It's not quite as low of contrast. And then blocks 4 and 5 went up and it was like, whoa, whoa, get yourself in gear here, Jennifer. Get a grip on yourself, because what I found is I'm addicted to contrast. I'm pretty sure that's my deal.
Well, and the one thing that's been really fun for me to see with your quilt is we are lucky enough that in our sewing area at work, we have a design wall, and it's a piece of flannel that's up a large area on the wall, and people can put their blocks up and kind of audition different places for different blocks to go. And it's been really fun to see those blocks up. And I think sometimes you need to put things up on a design wall, take a step back, look at it from across the room, or squint and see, you know, sometimes you see things that you don't see when you're looking at it straight on, or if you just have the pieces laid on out on the table. So I think having that design wall has been a really good tool as well.
Right. And that for me was really the thing that pointed out how much contrast I was adding each step of the way. Because when I put them on the design wall, I would step back, you know, 10 feet or so, and I'd think, I forgot I was doing low contrast. And then I'd make another one and I'd think, oh, this is it. This is it for sure. And I'd put the pieces together and then I'd take a picture on my cell phone so I could sort of look at the arrangement. And it was like, wow, that block really just pops off of there. And again, the contrast was too much. So for me, the quilt along has been a great challenge to really force myself to limit my selections and to try to get the best design out of a particular challenge, which in this case for me was low contrast. Yours was more about being inspired by that particular border print.
Well, and tell me about now, because I can't remember, I don't have it right in front of me. Did you use 2 fabrics per block in your block, or did you use more than 2 fabrics?
I did use just 2 fabrics in a block.
And I think that makes a difference because you can really see the contrast depending on the 2 fabrics that you select. And then mine was a little more scrappy. Mine has 5 or 6 fabrics in a block depending on how I wanted to make that particular block. And another thing you can do is you don't have to cut all your pieces out at the beginning. You know, you can make a few blocks and then go back and do some more cutting when you see what you like, what you don't like, what you're missing, what you think you might need to add.
Right. And for me, each block was its own distinct project. I didn't cut out any more than a block at a time. And if you want to get a good laugh, you can go to our blog and read about my inability to get this one piece in the right position every single time. And I did finally figure out why I was doing it, but it was a humorous event because I couldn't figure out why every single time, even when I looked at it and was sure I had it right, I'd sew it together and I'd be like, still put that piece in backwards. So the thing I think about a quilt along in general that's good if you're looking for a way to challenge yourself is that it's just about you. You don't have to worry about being committed to anyone else in the group in terms of getting something done by a certain time, and it allows you a little bit more flexibility. So for those of you listening, if you haven't participated in a quilt along before, it's really low pressure. I mean, it's fun to see what everyone else is making. A lot of people will share their best tips for how they put the block together. And sometimes you do have that part in a block where you're like, you know, why can't I get this right? Now, I don't know that my advice of how to pay attention to which way you were turning those pieces helped anybody, but at least if anybody else was making that same mistake, maybe they felt better about it.
It's really been a fun experience, I think, to, again, I mentioned this earlier, but to just see the different color combinations and to go anywhere from two fabrics, which you used, to multiple fabrics. And, you know, in some blocks, every fabric may be different because people really did follow Lisa's advice of making it super, super scrappy. So whatever your preference is, this is a great block to try out because there just are so many options and it looks good in so many different combinations.
Right. And I think in keeping with that, one of the things that I have heard from people who were I started making mine at a retreat. And when they saw that really low volume, low contrast in my blocks, people would walk by the table and go like, what are you going to make out of that? Oh, I would never work in those colors. You know, that's way too drab for me. And then as the blocks came together, they'd pass by and say, you know, I really do like that. I mean, I could see making that quilt for a guy, or I could see making that for my son. So sometimes I think the challenge is in making selections that are outside your normal color palette, and that can really encourage you too. We're going to take a short break here, and then when we come back, we'll talk about another way that you can challenge yourself. And this one involves a little more participation from your quilting buddies and friends. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Hi, we're back here at American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Jennifer Keltner here in the studio with editor Jody Sanders. And Jody, we talked about the quilt along and how you could participate in that. And another way that we elected to challenge our readers in the February 2014 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting was by inviting them to hear about four designers who had gotten together for a round robin. Do you remember the term round robin? It's been around for a long time.
It is, and it can mean different things to different people, I think. But in our case, we invited four designers to, actually, they came to us with the quilts that they had done, and then we kind of incorporated that idea into a staff challenge as well. So it was fun to have them come to us and say, you know what, we did this round robin, and we started with each having our own center block, and then building from there.
Right. And what I think was fun, the article in the issue was called No Rules Round Robin. And when these four designers first got together, it was Terry Atkinson of Atkinson Designs, Carrie Carr of New Leaf Stitches, Gudrun Erla of GE Designs, and Terry Degenkolb of Whimsicals. And the four of them approached us because they had decided that they really needed to jumpstart their creativity. And to do this, they were going to participate in a round robin. And their no rules round robin was this. They had to each make a quilt center and then put into a box a prescribed amount of supplies. And they started out with this prescribed amount, but it soon became no rules. So as you can imagine, they could put whatever they wanted into the box and then send it to the next person. And imagine like the hand of a, or the faces on a clock at, you know, each of the four designers were going to shift those boxes one quarter turn each time, and the box would move forward to that designer. And every time they were adding another round or another something to the edges of their quilt. And I think the biggest challenge for round robin, it would be for me, is once you pass that box forward with your center and your supplies in it, you don't see it again until the very end.
Yeah, that would be hard for me, too. And I think that in this case, the designers knew each other well, and that helped them knowing that they could send their box forward and that what they got back at the end of this journey was going to be something that was going to be really interesting, something well done, because they knew each other and knew each other's work. And I think that's important as well. But for them to move that box forward, sometimes I think, too, it's like, oh, this trepidation of here it goes and I'm not going to see it again now for how many ever months it might be.
Absolutely. I think one of the really fun parts for us when they came to us with this story idea and whether or not we wanted to share it, at first they thought they were going to create a book of this experience. And they soon learned that creating a book became more cumbersome than really just enjoying the process for what it was, which was that challenge to grow and to learn more about themselves as quilters. And so they sort of abandoned the mission to create a book and decided it was more about the experience of how do you go through something like this. And what was most interesting to me, and what you'll read in that article or what you can see online at allpeoplequilt.com/863, is hearing these designers talk about it. But the overriding thing that I got out of it, in addition to how excited they were at the end of the journey, was that at the beginning of the process, there was so much fear. Fear of not being good enough, fear of wrecking someone else's work, fear of thinking that everybody else was going to have a great idea and they were going to be sort of at the well and there wasn't going to be anything to pull from it. How about you? What did you were here for the big reveal. What do you remember?
It really was fun to see the four of them get together. And they don't live necessarily close to each other. They don't see each other that often. So it wasn't like they had sort of talked about, you know, moving their box or moving it, just handing it over to the person. They were sending things in the mail off to people. And so they hadn't really been together or talked about the challenge. So to see the four of them together, number one, was really fun because you could see there was a camaraderie there. And so when we were able to see them see their quilts for the first time as they were revealed, it was really, they were all just so shocked, but in a great way. You know, they didn't expect to see, they didn't know what they expected to see, but it wasn't what they saw, if that makes any sense.
Right.
They just were so intrigued by it. And you could tell that they just looked around at every portion of the quilt, from the borders to, you know, each of the borders as they were added to each piece. And it was interesting to try and see if they could figure out who ordered or who added that particular border. Because you think you sort of know somebody, you know their style, and then it would be, oh, well, that's so-and-so ordered, added that border. Oh, my gosh, I didn't expect that from
right.
them.
And I think what was also interesting about this four group of designers, you do have to have a certain level of trust with people if you're going to get into a round robin with them, because you're sending off your quilt and you do want to be happy when you get it back with what people have done. But I think what was interesting to me about this group of four designers was they all had very different styles. And one more contemporary, one a little bit more simplistic, one maybe more graphic and artsy. And so I think that was the challenge that they posed for themselves, was to get outside of designing the way that they always designed. And one of the things that I took out of their finished work was how often people took a center, for example, and would put it on point. You know, so they sort of changed the design right out of the gate. Or in one case, a designer, and I think she was in the third or fourth round of adding things, so it was toward the end of the challenge, where she went back and added something to the center of the quilt.
Right.
So that part of the no rules and not really doing it in the expected way. Because I've heard of people doing round robins before where they have rules for every step of the way. So the center has to be a medallion applique. And the second round has to be something that's pieced with blocks. And the third round is applique again. But this one really was all bets were off. So what's exciting to me is you can read and see more about their reactions on our website. But after this story, and we got this through the routing in the office, we had four editors and designers on our staff who decided they'd take up the challenge and participate in their own round robin. And Jody, you were one of those editors. So share with me what that's been like for you.
Yeah, I think it was really fun for us to see how different the interpretations were for what the block should be or what the border should be, or like you say, either on point or maybe making something asymmetrical. And so when the four of us got together and decided we were going to do this, we kind of decided we wanted no rules, but at the same time, we still wanted some rules. So we kind of combined the process that they used with a process that was going to work for us. Now, again, we were close together, so we're handing off our box to somebody. But we did decide that we are not going to see anything. Again, for us, it's a surprise. The reveal will happen later in February so that we have an opportunity to see what happened to our blocks. But
So that's my favorite part. I am not participating in this challenge, but I get to see, and I've seen all four of them, and I can tell you they're amazing. But let's talk a little bit about the parameters that you set up, because a couple of things that you did differently, or I don't know that they were set up this way for the gals who did the original challenge, but you changed the time between the amount of time you had for each round. Instead of setting it up for, you get 2 weeks for every round.
Right.
Talk about that.
Right. The beginning, we all started with it couldn't be larger than a 12-inch block. It could be square, it could be rectangular, but it needed to be no larger than 12 inches because we knew we weren't going to have time to make big quilts, and so we kind of wanted to start with something that was doable. For the first couple rounds, we had about 2 weeks time, two and a half weeks, and we did set those times and we did try and make them firm as much as we could, so that's one of the things that you want to do is have people that are going to follow those guidelines.
Right.
So you can
if
do
you're
that.
A bad round robin participant, usually the people who get kicked out of the group or don't get invited to participate a second time is the people who can't meet the deadlines, because that is essential to the to this challenge. You do have to be accountable to the other people in it, to be fair.
Right. And it's just a courtesy to the person you're handing it to next, because we do have those deadlines that we were trying to meet. The thing that we did a little differently is that our very last deadline is a little bit longer. We extended it a week from the other deadline, so we made it a 3 week rather than 2 weeks, because we knew it was going to be larger at that point and it might take us a little longer to get that last border on. So we made that last deadline a little longer.
And what's interesting to me is obviously the first article that we did in the magazine, and for those of you who haven't seen the February issue, if you don't have that or don't have it available to you, you can get a digital version if you go to allpeoplequilt.com/getdigital. And you can buy the back issues there. So if you haven't seen it, you can go there. But one of the things, for those designers, fear was a big part of it. And you all are quilting editors and designers, but not that's not your profession. So what was the biggest challenge for you?
I think I just wanted to start out with a great center block, because I knew that the other gals were so talented that I was handing it off to, that I'm like, I want to start with a great center because I know what they add to it is going to be really wonderful. So I actually made two blocks for my center and tried to decide between the two because I just wanted to make sure that I had something that was really going to be a great start. And also picking the fabrics. We kind of had said that we would each do 20 fat quarters and then like a half yard or a yard of a background fabric. And that was hard for me. I narrowed it down to two colors. Mine is red and white. And we have blogged about these. So you can go to the allpeoplequilt.com staff blog and take a look at what we've done so far. Now you're just going to see the beginnings.
Right. That's the one you'll find under the magazines and more tab. Our magazines at the top. If you hit that button across the top bar at allpeoplequilt.com and look for blog, you can hit that.
Yeah. And that's a great way. For right now, if you go, you're probably maybe just going to see the center blocks because we haven't done our final reveal yet. But at some point, you'll be able to see all four of the quilts and all four of the rounds. Or the center block and then the three rounds that were added after that. It's been really fun to blog about it and then kind of know that at the end sometime you're going to be able to see this really fabulous thing. And it's not only what we've completed, but I think it's the camaraderie and knowing that I'm going to have something that I know how much I put into it and I know how much my coworkers put into it as well.
Right.
Really a treasure.
That'll really be a treasure. You're right. So we've talked about a couple of ways you can participate in quilt-alongs. You can participate in round robins. And next up, we're going to talk about some things that you can participate in individually. So please come back. We're going to take another break here. And when we return, we'll talk about some things we do in Quilts and More magazine to encourage people to challenge and to grow as quilters.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box. Label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Jennifer Keltner here with editor Jody Sanders from Quilts and More. And today we're talking about ways to grow your skills as a quilter and by learning more things. So we've talked about a few ways to do that, and now we're going to talk and turn our attention to some ways in the magazine where we try to always make sure that we're giving you a challenge. And maybe group challenges aren't your thing. Maybe you don't know other quilters in your area, or you're just ready to sort of jumpstart your creative juices. So, Jody, let's talk about a column that appears regularly in Quilts and More, and that is one that was inspired for many of us. We're also watching all the Food Network channel, all the shows about having certain ingredients, whether it's the Iron Chef and today's magic ingredient or whatever that is. It seems like there's a plethora of shows where you get a certain set of ingredients and you have to make something from it. You can make anything you want, but it's about how creative you can be with those ingredients. So taking that pattern, let's talk about the regular column that appears in Quilts and More, Scrap Lab.
We've had a lot of fun with this column, and there are some just very few basic rules. And as Jennifer mentioned on those cooking shows, usually it's like a one super ingredient, or you get a basket full of things that maybe seem disparate and don't go together. And what can you do with those ingredients? Well, we're doing that with fabric. And we have two designers that are involved in the Scrap Lab project for a year at a time. And then we invite a guest designer. And in the past, we've had Joanna Figueroa and Camille Ross Kelly. And currently we have Carrie Nelson and Patty Young that are our designers for the year for 2014 for Quilts and More magazine. And then we have a guest designer. And what we do is we give each of those three designers a specific set of materials. So it might be a charm pack and a half yard of a solid. It might be some 2.5-inch strips, and they can add something else from their own stash. And then they can create whatever they want. We really, for the most part, give them free rein to then take those materials and come up with whatever they can.
And I think that's the great part about it. The guest designer changes every issue. So we're really working with the two regulars and the one guest. So what does that make? Six different designers in the year, and you can see how they come up with these projects. And the things they come up with are so varied. It's amazing to me. I mean, we've had designers who have made skirts, needle rolls, pillows, table runners, baby quilts, table toppers, notebook covers, all kinds of pin cushions and things. Lots of times they're coming up with objects because we purposefully keep the set of ingredients, as we call them, limited, so they really have to get creative with how they can make other things from it.
And it's so fun to see what they, how they interpret those particular fabrics and those particular sets of ingredients. As I mentioned, it may be a small little 2.5-inch strip. It may be a whole fat quarter. It may be a half a yard. Like you say, we've had everything from little pin cushions to garments made.
Right. And you can see this plethora of projects at allpeoplequilt.com/scraplab if you want to go out and take a look at all the different things that have been made. And of course, any back issues of Quilts and More are available at allpeoplequilt.com/getdigital. So if you want to go back and you find a project in that slideshow online where you're like, oh my gosh, I would love to make that, we do have instructions for all of the things that you see either at allpeoplequilt.com or in the back issues of Quilts and More.
And in the issue itself, we usually have two of the three projects are in the magazine itself, and then the other project is online. So you're always going to get two of those in the magazine, then you can go online and get that third one. But as Jennifer mentioned, we do have a place at allpeoplequilt.com where you can go and see that slideshow to see the back things that we've done from previous issues.
And what kind of plans do you have upcoming for this year? So far, pretty much what we've worked with in Scrap Lab has always been 100% cotton quilting fabric ingredients.
Right. You know, it's funny because we just have always done that. We just have always done it that way. But one of the things we talked about is this is a challenge. So what are we going to do to challenge our designers? And we've been thinking that maybe we'll introduce some different kinds of fabric. So that might be fleece, it might be corduroy, it might be velvet, it might be a knit. We just thought it would be fun to actually kind of, as they say, sometimes kick it up a notch and try something different in terms of materials that we're letting them use. And then also for them to be able to maybe add a few things from their button box or their thread collection or something else that they want to add to the mix.
And I think it's always a challenge, you know, when we give them a prescribed set of ingredients. But what I always think about in terms of Scrap Lab is we all sort of have this challenge in our own sewing room. If you have any kind of fabric stash, sometimes some of my best sewing happens on days when I'm snowed in or I have some unexpected time, but I don't have time or the quilt shop is closed and I can't get there and I really want to make something. But what have I got on hand that I could make something with? And so for those of you who maybe don't have exactly the same set of prescribed ingredients, but you can't do the same challenge in your own sewing room. You and a friend can, you know, if you've got a charm pack of something or you've got two of something, you know, invite one of your sewing buddies over and divvy up those ingredients and then see what you can make. If all bets are off and you can do anything you want to do, what can you come up with? You can really get creative.
Yeah, I had that happen actually in my small group where one of the members had a fabric that she bought quite a few yards of and then a few years later said, I'm never probably going to use all this. She gave us each a fat quarter and challenged us to make something with it. And we had a year, and so we came back, and again, all different kinds of things from table runners to bags to journal covers. It was really fun to see how people interpreted that particular fabric that we were given.
Oh my gosh, if I had a year and a fat quarter, my challenge would be keeping track of the fat quarter
well,
for a year.
You know,
I'd have to make something right away or
else... many of us, it was usually the 2 weeks before the deadline that we actually were getting the items made. But
again, I'd be on the great hunt looking for that particular fat cord. I don't know how many of you listeners are the same way as I am, but that would definitely be the challenge. So the Scrap Lab in Quilts and More magazine is one way that we encourage people to learn more. One of my other favorite columns that we put in the magazine is Ready, Set, Sew. And Ready, Set, Sew is all about teaching kids how to sew. And I think that sometimes we think about learning new things as being sort of a central focus on myself. What can I learn? But teaching someone else to sew, I think, is one of the richest things as a quilter you can pass along to someone else. And in this case, it's teaching children to sew.
Right. And we've been very fortunate. We have partnered with Amy Barrickman of Indigo Junction. And Amy herself is a mom. And she was growing up in a family where her mom also did crafts of certain kinds. And so she grew up as a child learning to do those kinds of things. And she also, as a mom, is very in tune to the kinds of projects that her kids might be interested in learning about and wanting to pass down that heritage of learning to sew and learning to craft. And so we've been very fortunate to partner with Amy with these projects for Ready, Set, Sew.
And I think one thing that's fun about working with Amy is that these are tested by kids. So before we put the instructions into the magazine, we do actually have them made by kids. And it's been fun for us to have them come into our sewing lab as well and to work on some of the projects and to see how excited they get about it. And I think it's important as quilters to remember that many of us learn to sew either from a relative or in many cases from a home ec teacher. We had sewing in schools, and so many schools today don't have sewing. So if we want this hobby to be something that is passed on, and I think all of us would agree, there's such a great benefit to learning to make things with your hands, the therapy, the mental health therapy, and just the physical need to sit and make something out of cloth is great. And so being able to share that with a child is super important. So what are some of the things in the Ready, Set, Sew column that people can look for in terms of how the instructions are prepared or the kinds of things that we're making?
I think that, you know, we're always keeping in mind that Quilts and More is easy, easier, easiest. And so we are looking for kinds of projects that a child would actually make for themselves. We're not just sitting down and trying to teach them to sew something that then they're going to cast aside and not use. So we did do things like a pencil bag and a pillow and a tote bag that they might be able to use. And so they're very kid-friendly items that they would actually use when they were done. We're also keeping the instructions and the materials list fairly basic. We don't have a lot of extra parts and pieces that you need to complete the projects because, again, that can be overwhelming to a beginning sewer. So I think keeping the materials list fairly simple and keeping the instructions really basic and a lot of photos. We do a lot of how-to photos, and I think that's really helpful for kids that are maybe more visual learners than actually reading through all the text.
Right. And I think what's important to know about teaching kids to sew today, or what I've learned, are a couple things. One, they have no fear of the machine. Kids are so technologically savvy these days that where we used to go and, you know, the teacher would say, don't touch that dial, don't move the tension, don't do anything. Kids sit down and are very comfortable operating machinery. And so you have to have a few safety discussions with them about not running it, you know, across their fingers or whatever. But even very young kids, if you have young kids in your life who you want to have sew alongside of you, there are some special things that you can do to make it easier for them. And one of my favorite tips there that we use sometimes with our Million Pillowcase Challenge is taking the foot pedal and putting it up next to the machine on the table. And if you have even a 3 or 4 year old who wants to sew alongside of you, who you want to encourage to embrace this hobby, you can put that foot pedal up on the table and let them press on it with their hand so that they get the feeling of, you know what, I'm sewing. And you tell them to push on it until you say stop, and then they let go of it. And man, if you want to see somebody's face light up, let's a child who maybe doesn't usually get a chance to sew with mom have that chance to sew with grandma or with a friend or neighbor who's not, you know, going to tell them what they can't touch, but tell them, hey, you can help me with this. Do you want to push the pedal? It's an awesome way. So that's a great way. We'll come back after the break. We've got to take a short break here, but we'll talk a little bit more about teaching kids to sew, some other things that we have, and then we'll also finish up our segment today by talking about teaching adults to sew, because there are many adults who never did learn to sew who want to pick up that hobby now, and we'll talk about that as a challenge for the coming year as well. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm Jennifer Keltner, and please join us right after the break.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Hi, you're back again with Jennifer Keltner and Jody Sanders, and we're discussing on American Patchwork and Quilting Radio different challenges for quilters. And we finished the last segment, Jody, talking about teaching kids to sew. We talked about the possibility of putting the foot pedal up on the table for little kids. But those kids who can't quite reach the pedal on the floor, you can also raise up the foot pedal and put it on a stool or something sturdy, a stack of books, so that they can reach it. Because most of all, it's important that kids can see the needle and see what's happening on top of the machine so that they can have success. And you've got another tip to share.
I think one of the most challenging things for any quilter is to get that accurate quarter-inch seam. So one thing you can do to kind of help a new sewer is to use some painter's tape, something with kind of a little bit of a low tack, and you can get your quarter inch seam and then maybe stack maybe 3 or 4 pieces of tape, line them all up, and they can use that as their guide for their quarter inch seam.
I always think of that as like bumpers for teaching kids how to bowl. You can, you know, put that bumper up there so they don't swerve and they have an easy, bigger thing to see. It's can be hard to see the lines on the throat plate for little people.
And helps guide that fabric a little bit as well.
Right. Now, we have also done some kid-friendly projects on our Million Pillowcase Challenge. So at allpeoplequilt.com/millionpillowcases, you'll see on that page there's an education tab. And if you click on that, there are actually 4 sets of kid-friendly pillowcase patterns. And we've had great fun trying these patterns out with some volunteers that have come into our sewing lab. You'll find some teaching tools there, too, if you're an educator and you want to use them or you're a scout leader. But what I love about these kid-style patterns is we've taken the basic roll-it-up method pillowcase and we've taken some other basic patterns and we tested them with a group of children. And my favorite example that came out of this was we thought we had these patterns down pat. And for adults, they were perfect. But when we had kids try it, the first thing we had them do was square up the right-hand edge of the fabric. And as they were working on that, we had an instruction in there, I think, that told them to do something on the right side of the fabric. And so this child who was working on this pattern went to the literal right side of the fabric as opposed to the left side of the fabric and started trying to figure out what to do. And so we asked her, we said, you know, do you know what the right side of the fabric is? And she said, oh, yes. And she walked over to the right-hand edge of it. And we're like, okay. So if we're trying to show you the difference between the right side and the wrong side of fabric, what would you call this? Well, one was the pretty side and the other side was the dull side. And so the instructions were modified in that language for kids so that they could figure out what they were doing and wouldn't necessarily need an adult standing over their shoulder every step of the way.
I think that's a great, you know, just testing it sometimes too, trying out those instructions that you think you have all figured out, actually trying it on the audience that you're using it with. It makes a huge difference. Another resource as far as if you're wanting to learn more about sewing and more about how to do things is the Back to Basics section that we have in Quilts and More magazine. And what we do is we have a 8 pages in the back of the magazine that can tell you how to do your binding. It can tell you how to square up those edges. It can tell you what bias means. So instead of including that in each individual story, we have a great section in the back of the magazine every issue that is kind of your go-to resource guide to find out how to do those things that you maybe aren't quite sure how you should tackle that technique.
Right, especially when it's things that you don't do every time, like piecing. Beginning quilters often will get their piecing down, and you might have some friends like this that you like to quilt with and you've taught them how to piece, but I mean, how often do you bind a quilt? So you do need to go back and refer to those instructions. One of the other things you'll find in Quilts and More magazine that I really appreciate when I'm trying to teach someone how to finish their quilts, because quilt making isn't only about the piecing. It can be start to finish. How do you put the layers together and quilt it? And that's the Finish Line article. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
That's been really well received. We started that a couple years ago, and we take just basic solid fabric so that you can see the quilting designs on the fabric. But we take solid fabrics and we put together a really basic block. So it might be a log cabin, it might be a rail fence, it could be putting squares together into a 9-patch. We put some blocks together and then we give it to a machine quilter and we have her quilt it 2 different ways. The first way is usually kind of basic, maybe straight lines. And then the second way, we have her do something a little more complicated. It might be a curved design. It could be a continuous line where you start and you sew from seam to seam to seam and you don't stop. But it's been really fun to see the different designs that can be put on, because I think too many times we just follow the line of the seam.
Right. And I think one thing I will always remember as my early years of quilting is when you can deconstruct for someone, a beginning quilter, how a design is stitched for quilting. The one I always remember is piano keys. It was a border that had piano keys. And I thought, well, I will never make that design, because who wants to start and stop that many times for all those little short lines? And when someone showed me how you stitch piano keys in continuous lines and just extend out past the border and then sew along in the ditch on the inside of that, it was like angels were singing. I couldn't believe that you could see that. So I think, you know, one of the things that we'd like to challenge all of you who are listening to do is find a friend who says, you know, I love the quilts that you make. I'd love to be able to do that, but I could never do it. If you can share this hobby with someone and teach them to become a quilter and to really enjoy it as much as all of us do, what a gift and a treasure you're passing on to that person.
That's right. I want to back up just a minute on the Finish Line stuff, though, and mention that in addition to having photographs of how they're quilt, we also do step-by-step diagrams. So we actually show you as well. And I think that that's really important to show, okay, I go this far, and then I turn around, and then I pivot. In addition to the instructions, there's also some really nice diagrams to go with it.
Right, and something you can save and keep as a part of your library in your sewing room so that you can refer to it. And I love that you use those common blocks, because then so many of us make quilts that have star blocks or log cabin blocks, and you're always looking for different ideas of what to do with that. One of my other favorite stories I'd like to share about teaching other people to sew is sometimes we think in beginning quilt making that you have to make a small project. And so we try to look in our magazines and in our pattern resources that we have, and we pull out things that are small because we think, okay, well, they can start and finish this project and have that feeling of accomplishment. And again, here at the office, I was teaching a couple of newer staff people, this is a few years ago, to make a quilt project, and it was going to be their first project. I'd picked out a pattern. I was all smiles. I thought it was going to be the most fabulous experience of their lives, and they sat down, and they were making a little table mat. I mean, it couldn't have been more than 15 inches square, and I was so proud of myself, and they sat down, and they're like, this is what we're going to make, and I'm like, yeah, and they go, oh, my gosh, and I'm like, what, and they go, oh, there are so many pieces, and I'm like, it's only like 15 inches square, and they're like, yeah, but there's like, you know, like 45 or 50 pieces in this thing, and they couldn't get over it. And that was a reminder to me that sometimes when you're making something with a beginning quilter, they do like that feeling of accomplishment. They like to make something big that they can show people, but they're counting 50 pieces in a 15-inch thing, where I could have made something with 50 pieces and been a throw, and they would have been more excited about it. So really tailor your project selection for a beginner to something, A, they want to make it, but B, how many pieces are in it.
And I think breaking it down into step by step helps as well. It can be overwhelming because, like you mentioned, they look at the finished thing and think, oh my gosh, this is so many pieces. But just breaking it down into, well, you know, there's three pieces here and there's another three pieces here, and then we'll add the four borders later. Sometimes just breaking it down into those steps in the beginning, I think, really helps too.
So where are other places you can go to find resources if you're trying to teach someone else to sew? If they don't know how to sew at all, and again, there are many adults who got into that classroom setting where there weren't home ec teachers maybe at their high school anymore. They didn't learn to sew there, and they didn't have a parent or a relative who sewed. So if you don't have any basic sewing skills, we have a website called howtosew.com. And at howtosew.com, it's really not geared toward quilting necessarily, as it is those basic, very simple sewing skills that people may not have learned from anyone else. And I think with Pinterest and Etsy and all of those sites online now that there are so many cute things that are sewn, people don't have any basic skills. They don't know how to thread a machine. They don't know what they need. They don't, you know, have any ideas what a quarter inch seam is.
Or adding a button or doing a hem. You know, those are things that, you know, people need to know how to do, but they haven't necessarily been taught. And howtosew.com has some awesome tutorials that show you some things like that.
Right. Lots of step-by-steps. There are some videos there as well. There are also great gift ideas. There's a category across the top where there's a button you can push for first projects that really are super simple projects. So if you have friends who are wanting to learn to sew, encourage them to visit howtosew.com or pick a project out there that you might be able to do with them. The other place is for your friends who want to learn to quilt, allpeoplequilt.com.
We've got a plethora of projects on the site itself. You can get everything from bags to pincushions to full-size quilts. You can learn how to do applique. You can learn how to do piecing. We just have a terrific amount of resources there. In addition to the color options, we have a lot of instructions for the color options that appear in American Patchwork and Quilting.
Right. And if it's inspiration you're looking for, you can always sign up for our newsletter. You can do that while you're at allpeoplequilt.com, and we'll deliver to you every week inspiration in the form of a weekly email where we'll give you visual inspiration, tips and techniques, and all kinds of things to inspire you. So if you're a budding quilter or you want to encourage another quilter, encourage them to visit allpeoplequilt.com in addition to Quilts and More magazine, American Patchwork and Quilting magazine. We have a great time here in the office putting together all kinds of quilting media for you to enjoy. And we hope that today, after listening to our conversation, that we've encouraged you to participate in a quilt along or join a round robin or teach a child or another friend how to quilt or to take up the Scrap Lab Challenge every issue of Quilts and More. Four times a year, you can get that prescribed set of ingredients and play along with us. So whatever it is, most of all, we hope that you will be encouraged to continue growing and learning as a quilter so that you want to make more quilts. We're all passionate quilters here in the office, and we know you are as well. So thank you for joining us here today on American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We hope you'll be back next week with our host, Pat Sloan, for more about quilting. We love it, we live it every day, and we keep on learning more about it. Have a great day.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.